Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm in charge. Okay. I was like, when's Riley going to start the show? I'm just like, Riley, father is here. Okay.
Mm.
Well, father for now.
Father for now until you become our daughter. No, no, well, until you become our daughter.
Oh, true. Yeah, okay.
Like, that's how it's going to, we're going to invert it. Like,
wait, hold on, hold on. Yeah. Hold on. Are we suggesting that transit, like, your rank in the trans community is quite a bit like becoming a post captain?
Yes, it's like time and grade.
Almost
yes,
exactly.
Yes.
It's like you've been in the core less time, right? Uh-huh. Like, I have to pay respects to people much younger than me because they've been out longer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, like, but I, you know, I think, but if you transition finally, when you transition, you were wondering off mic when we were gonna do the transition bit, and you started it. Just FYI. Uh-huh. Oh no! I hope nobody jokes about me transitioning again. I'm starting the show. Okay.
So, are you saying it's just like if you have like. If you have a son, you put him on the naval rolls.
Yes.
You know what it was?
Yes.
Kim Petras was put on the naval rolls at like the age of 8 and so was
That's
able
true.
To establish like a seniority in the community.
In that respect, are puberty blockers not a fine British naval tradition?
Oh.
Answer me that.
Okay. I'm starting the show. It's No Gods, No Mares. It's the free feed. Thank you for listening.
Mm.
Today we're going back into the well of history. I'm Maddie. I'm here. I'm the mayor of the episode. I'm here with my deputy mayors, Nova and Riley. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I just want to emphasize at this time, we have heard you. We have listened. The two-part episode shit. We will do our best not to do this again. Please stop getting mad at us on social media.
Please stop writing in to make me feel bad specifically. You've hurt my feelings.
Mm. Look, November and I can deal with it. Maddie can't.
I'm sensitive. Mm. I'm sensitive. I don't like them either. Okay. Anyways, we're dipping back into history today with a mayor of history that we'll get into in a moment. But first, it's time. Giddy up. It's Municipal Roundup.
We have a sound effect for that.
Yeah, that's nice. Incredible. I hope it gets put in, because if it doesn't, we're going to sound really stupid.
No, just dead silence and me reacting to nothing. Just be like, wow, yeah! That's a really good sound effect.
Yeah, incredible production value on this one.
Just like filming us in front of a green screen that we forget to color in.
Yeah, that's right.
Here in beautiful Paris, hand banging off green screen.
Yeah. Why, who's that? It's Anne Hidalgo.
I didn't know you liked mayors. So the first one is an annoying one, which is Eric Adams passed a bunch of his annoying ballot measures in the elections here in New York, which means the Department of Sanitation can now like arrest people trying to sell churros and stuff.
What the fuck? I know they have cops. I know it's like one of my little favorite factors that the Department of Sanitation has a police department, but like giving them like power instead of making them the like joke trash cops, that troubles me.
It was worded very like, give the Department of Sanitation the power to like clean up the streets more easily. And it's like, no, the DSNY is now allowed to like ticket people for, you know, being homeless or selling food in the wrong place or whatever. And we'll see if New York's strongest remain cool or not. I doubt they
will. I'm
gonna
have to throw out my New York City sanitation police patch from the collection solemnly as an object, as a vile object, an object of disgust to me.
Yeah.
Isn't this a little bit just like what Gavin Newsom wanted to do, but where he was like, what if we deputized every city employee to hand out litter citations, even like people who work in the comptroller's office?
Yeah. It seems, it's certainly just like more war on the homeless shit. I don't know why everyone who hates Eric Adams was like, let's give him more power on the way out. That sounds awesome.
Maybe they were trying to like triangulate it. So they were like, Adams out, his successor, who we imagine to be nice. Obviously like in and empowered. But the thing is, because we live in hell and because Orange Man in White House again, Eric Adams federally pardoned, I am certain. Like, pencil that in.
Yeah, if they're trying to remove him from office, he's going to be like behind the Les Mis barricade at Gracie Mansion with a bunch of uniformed trash cops defending him. It's going to be awesome.
Uniformed trash cops, a bunch of those cop robots, walking dogs.
The drones that break windows.
He's got a Bayraktar drone from Turkey as a favor.
his version of the Roman salute is just the half heart.
Yeah, I've got enough Turkish pita in here to last me 6 months.
Just holding out on baklava while DSANY storm the barricade.
Another Eric Adams news, his longtime girlfriend Tracy Collins has sadly retired from her no-show job as, I quote one more time, senior advisor to the deputy chancellor of school leadership, a job that sounds like TK, 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 TK.
She wanted to spend less time with her family, so she wanted to get a show job.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out, like, again, like, what the fuck this job actually is. And an education department spokesperson would not respond to comment, but said he noted that her responsibilities included, quote, strategic planning, making recommendations on agency priorities, and providing advice and support to senior leadership.
Placeholder, fill in, rest later.
Peas and carrots, peas and carrots.
That's the official title of dumbest friend in the group chat. A position I've been proud to hold for many years. she advises, she consults, she sets like strategic direction.
She's kind of like a consigliere.
She decides whether or not your boyfriend is cool, you know, just basic stuff.
Yeah. I got one more municipal air update here, which is just an article you found in November. And the headline is, of course, if you would like to...
I love this fucking thing. I would like to read this into the record verbatim.
It is,
by some margin, it is a British text, right? And the headline is, it's from BBC News, Mayor in Vauxhall Corsa would diminish borough.
I mean, they're right.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
If the mayor, I think it would be funnier if we had mayors having to drive like appropriate cars for their region. Like if whoever was mayor of Southwark had to have like a Reliant Robin that he drove around like only fools and horses.
Oh, cool. It's the mayor of Hackney. Why is she driving around in like some kind of insane electrified bicycle situation?
You sent this headline and I was staring at it for like 10 minutes trying to understand it because I thought Vauxhall Corsa was a place. Because I don't know. It's not a car we have here.
I'm from Vauxhall Corsa.
Well, you've mentioned being at the Vauxhall Comedy Club for the Trash Future Live shows.
That's true. That's Vauxhall, why they make the Vauxhalls. Yeah.
Okay. But I was like, what the fuck could this pot, like, mayor in this place would diminish the borough. And I was like, what's wrong with this mayor? But no.
Plans to sell a borough's official mayoral car have been criticized as damaging to civic pride. This is a thing we've talked about on TF, right? Every local council in Britain is like mega bankrupt right now. Mm-hmm. And so Dudley Council plans to offload the vehicle and cut the post of a mayoral assistant as part of plans to reduce its budget. Labour councillor Adam Aston said, the idea that the mayor can turn up to functions in a Vauxhall Corsa and park next to the mayors of other authorities diminishes the status of the borough.
The other mayors will laugh at us.
Yes. It's conduct unbecoming of like a mayor.
They're going to go to mayor prom and you're going to pull up in the fucking Honda Civic and they're all going to make fun of us.
I can't believe I have to go to mayor prom in this stupid rented tuxedo.
Manchester's dad bought him an Escalade.
The mayor used to have a Jaguar XF. However, now, and this is where they include a picture of the hypothetical shitty car.
It's so funny. It's just like in the middle of this article, just here it is.
This is what a Vauxhall Corsa looks like. It's just like a small, like, four-door car.
This is me trying to imagine like a Peugeot or a Renault or something for the American listener. Peugeot. It's like what if a Corolla got squooshed?
Yeah. It's a special kind of car that I often forget really only exists in Europe.
Yeah.
Which is just like a stupid little car. But the fact that what they've done is they've basically done a reverse advertisement for the Vauxhall Corsa.
And be like, this shit car would embarrass our country. It goes on to say, the plan could also see the mayor wearing replica chains to smaller events because would no longer be in post to look after the valuable gold regalia.
Darren Lyons alert. Yeah.
Yeah, except shit Darren Lyons because just like a small plastic chain, you know?
You get to wear a necklace that just says "Imagine a chain," or maybe you carry around a printed out picture of the chain.
They've given the mayor a plastic chain full of gum. It's a replica. Yeah,
the mayor gets a candy necklace and is allowed to sometimes use his friend's car.
The council leader added, by no longer having a permanent mayoral car and attendant, we can save around £60,000 a year, which in council terms is not a lot of money, while providing the serving mayor with the freedom to drive themselves to any number of engagements as they wish.
That's just what Rob Ford did. Yeah, yes. That's what Rob Ford did.
We are going to get like a Ford Mustang with the custom license plate Dudley.
Yeah. And then Rob Ford, the eternal Rob Ford, is going to turn up in like a parking lot in the West Midlands to like, you know,
lumbering out of a very like low sports car.
Yeah. To like exchange briefcases full of McDonald's or whatever with like the worst criminal defense lawyer in Birmingham.
But Aston, and this is where we get into the like very obvious sort of motive for defending these things, who served as mayor's consort when his mother was mayor.
What?
This is my mayoral consort. Yeah, mayor my regnant? Son. Yeah.
Wait. The mayor regnant, the mayor regent.
But wait, Aston was the mayor's consort when his mother was mayor.
Yeah.
Is there some kind of like a mother boy situation?
Well, this is a common thing where like sometimes if the mayor or the head of state is not married, they have to like appoint a first person. So there was some U.S. president where it was his daughter. Like it's just sort of like you need someone to like receive dignitaries to drive them around in your Vauxhall car. Yeah,
Corsa. No, it would be weird if there was one person in a Vauxhall Corsa.
My Vauxhall consort.
Ah. Ooh. He said, whoever suggested this doesn't understand the importance of the mayor in the civic life of the borough.
Well, they haven't. They clearly haven't.
He said people were pleased when the mayor turned up to an event, but expected gold chains and the mayor to arrive in style. The borough's current mayor said she was unable to comment on the proposal.
Great name on the current mayor. Hillary Bills. Good name.
Hillary Bills.
Hill Bills.
Mayor Bills.
Hill Bills. We expect Hill Bills to roll up deep in a Jaguar, gold chains dripped out.
When we talk about Ava Bolander, who is functionally the mayor of Glasgow, we're also going to have to talk about mayoral cars because it is a weird thing in like British mayoralties. But I really enjoy this thing of be like, yeah, we're going to have to use this shit car. Here's a picture of the shit car.
I love the British obsession with Car Force One. I think that's really good.
Yeah. Mayor Force One?
Mayor Force One. That's much better.
How did nobody use this for Eric Adams' various Turkish jaunts?
Just a Turkish Airlines 737 full of passengers. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's mayoral roundup for the day.
It's a beautiful roundup of mayoral events.
We're going to now dive into history with our mayor of the episode, James Michael Curley of Boston, who is a real we found a guy kind of guy.
We're in Boston for this. We're in the town. Ben Affleck is here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Casey
Mark
Affleck.
Mark Wahlberg.
Also. Yeah.
Matt Damon.
We're all wearing the masks to rob the bank like they wear in the town, but we're wearing masks of one another. I've got a November mask. November has a Maddie mask. Maddie has a Riley mask.
I'm wearing a Riley mask, and I'm wearing also a bikini to show Riley what life could be like. Anywho, so James Michael Curley is an interesting guy because he was like, I was doing a lot of reading about the machine politics of Boston, and he was a sort of like very representative figure of that. So,
and he was the machine in the machine politics.
Yes. So James Michael Curley was born in Boston in 1874 to Irish immigrants. His father was a day laborer, but also what Wikipedia called a foot soldier for a Democratic ward boss, James P. Jacket McGuire.
Wait. Hold on. I need a couple of seconds to pass a few things out here. First of all, they don't let you be a foot soldier for things anymore. That's a real shame. That's a crying shame. Second thing, this ward boss, name James P. Jacket.
No,
with an air quotes McGuire.
No. It's James quotes P. Jacket with a hyphen McGuire, like a peacoat, I think.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's also cool, right? To wear a distinctive jacket, so distinctive that you get a nickname off of it. That's kind of cool.
There were two James McGuires in the Boston machine politics of the time, and this was the least important one.
You got the worst McGuire. You got the duds. The other guy had a cooler nickname. This guy's just like, yeah, he's got a jacket on, I guess.
Yeah.
James Two Shoes Maguire, you know, just like really, really casting around for something about this guy.
Old Thumbs Maguire. Yeah.
James Average Heights Maguire.
Hey, stop fucking with us down in Southie, or I'm gonna have my friend James 5'10" Maguire.
Well, that would be quite tall for 1874.
Old brown hair himself.
We'll get into what a ward boss is in a second, but it's basically being like
Mr.
a capo regime.
Three meals a day.
Anyways, so we got a kind of a Giuliani situation here where when James was 10, his father died and James, Michael Curley, started working while he was attending school and his mother started scrubbing floors. At 15, he left school and went to the factory because it was 1889 and Big Brother did not yet prevent children from working. We should return to that, obviously. We all love it. His mother reportedly endeavored to keep him away from his father's local Democratic Party associates because it kind of seems like they were maybe the mafia locally.
Yeah. I don't want you hanging out with those pea jacket boys anymore.
Like truly, like your father was like a foot soldier for the Democratic Party mob, and I want to keep you away from him, like Giuliani style.
Uh-huh.
Your dad was the boxer with glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually important context for Curley because very similar to Giuliani, he was like a product of this like mafioso-est ward boss system.
I'm raising my hand here to say that I'm scared, right? Because I don't know if the world was ready for an Irish Giuliani, you know?
Well, this is well before Giuliani.
Irish pre-Giuliani.
Yeah, Giuliani zero. So Boston's ward boss system at the time was running strong and it functioned in a very similar way to the mafia. Like in the 70s, here's some context.
It just works. That's the system. If you want to organize a city in the like late 19th century, you got the mafia or you got like the mafia, but with votes. You know?
So like people are saying nowadays, like you and your friend should get organized, right? You and your friend should start a local crime syndicate. The RICO Act isn't real and it can't hurt you.
Step one, distinctive nicknames based on your traits or appearances.
That's right. Become tall or short.
Quickly, we need to get the protection money together. Riley Trousers is coming down the street.
Unfortunately, like my kind of like mob is unable to secure any like streets because all of our nicknames are just transgender and it gets very hard to tell us apart.
It's you talking about big sock, a little sock.
fucking sock, Lucy and Yak jumpsuit last name.
Fuck, their last name is also Sock.
I keep running your mouth. See what happens if you keep talking like that when Odette oversized scarf gets here.
Hey, it's Johnny Solovez.
In the 1870s, Boston's population swelled by about 45%, and Irish immigrants were most of that. So at this point, 40% of the city's Irish. But despite the enormous population and political leverage, the Yankees, like what you might call a Boston Brahmin.
The kind of like fighting retreat of the Boston Wasps is so funny to me. To be looking at the now most stereotypically Irish American city in America and be like, this used to be a nice place till they started letting all the fucking Irish in here. This used to be Dutch, ?
It was it was British is what it was.
Dutch Boston. Bostoon.
Bostoon.
Herverdjerd.
Fuck. So the Boston Brahmin had kind of like essentially shut the Irish population out of political power locally. This is a really familiar story in a lot of American cities, right? So the Irish built their own parallel political infrastructure and they formed a sort of shadow government in Boston. So the way the ward system operated was each little ward functioned as its own like autonomous little political machine. They would literally whip the votes for the neighborhood through whatever means, including violence or whatever.
Yeah, like sending the guy out to vote, shaving him, sending him back out to vote again.
Yeah, like for real. The elected candidates would then kick back like patronage, support, favors, whatever to the ward boss. They would do like throw votes into the river or one legendary ward boss, Martin Lomasny. Sorry, I'll come up later.
Martin Lomasny. The M is for Lomasny.
Yeah, he was renowned for his ability to get deceased voters back onto the register. That was like his famed move.
Marty Lazarus, as they used to call him.
The other Patrick Maguire, Patrick J. Maguire, was sort of a Boss Tweed for late 19th century Boston. He himself...
Boston Tweed.
Yeah, Boston Tweed. Again, we're there. He seemed to control the local Democratic Party with an iron fist, and they were basically in charge of Boston. So the machine worked really well. By the year 1900, Irish people held a lot more of respectable jobs in town, which is to say, like, they worked in the city government a lot. Like a third of municipal jobs were now Irish held, and a lot of Boston Irish finally reached the middle class.
Reading through my big copy of How the Irish Became White, and it just has a big 72-point font page that just says fewer nicknames.
It says it says the Mafia, parentheses Irish, parentheses voting.
Oh yeah, those guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, it worked.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of thing where it's like, it turns out if you promise people stuff, they will vote for you. Is what they kind of stumbled upon.
Well, it's, you need to do a combination. It's not enough to do voting. You also have to build power. And it turns out that building power was starting your own mafia.
Yeah.
Again. Just this kind of Tammany Hall that responds like the Democratic Party now and doesn't do anything, but still expects the kickbacks. And you just have like a Will Stansel in a stovepipe hat being like, listen, you might not like bribing me, but if you look at the graphs, you'll see that I'm actually doing considerably better economically from
it. How about this, though? It's, you do the same thing, Tammany Hall setup, but they operate like Democrats now. And it's like, we've got the Tom Thumb endorsement. Tom Thumb never endorses.
They paid Tom Thumb $100,000, yeah?
It's Pride Month at Tammany Hall. They put the flag out and everything. I'm not sure why I keep referencing Will Stansel. He's become a bit of a tulpa for me lately.
19th century Will Stansel is going to really stick with me.
I could have just as easily said like Debbie Wasserman Schultz or something, you know? Like,
so at this point, Curly is, he's getting involved a little bit locally. He's a member of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, which is like...
ever since I was a kid, all I ever wanted to be was an ancient Hibernian.
Imagining Hibernia like it's Lemuria. It's at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, I'm going to be like those guys in Green Knight.
Yeah. So that's a benefit society that assists Irish immigrants coming to the country.
Still around as like a kind of like a drinking club for like Irish American politicians.
Yeah, they definitely march in the St. Patrick's Day parade in New York, I'm pretty sure.
March, stumble,
push me out of the way. But he also ran to be a member of Boston's Common Council. At the time, the city council was a bicameral thing. There was this huge Common Council. It was like 75 members. And then there was a smaller 12 aldermen that was elected at large.
Oh, so it literally run like the city of London then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was And he was not a member of any ward or political machine club. And then lost his race for Common Council.
You got to be in a club. You got to have a nickname, you know?
Yeah. So
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm giving up on it.
I'm giving up on it. So what happens next, Matty?
Well, great question. So Curly joins a machine faction being run by this guy, Charles Quirk, because this country used to have real names, like a guy named Chuck Quirk.
Chuck Quirk. Fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah. It's a guy wearing two monocles threatening to extort your fruit stand.
Yeah. He's got two monocles.
Quirky Charles. You don't want to piss him off.
Give him the quirk, Charlie.
He's dressed up like Zooey Deschanel in The New Girl. He's got like a pillbox hat. He's got two monocles.
They called him that because of the one eyebrow, you know, kind of raised.
He's got the bag of potato chips on his head. He's.
So crazy.
Love him. So the Gilded Age, right, is winding up here, and helping the poor was not considered a legitimate use of government, which, not like now, but obviously we're like, obviously we should all help the poor. We love to do it. Everyone's rich now, I think. But it was very much like the idea of any social program, right, was like insane to even consider. And Curly sort of rises through the ranks of local popularity, saying like he's going to help the poor finally, right? So our boy Curly is a hustler, and at the age of 26 in 1900, he's the youngest ward boss in Boston. And in 1901, he finally gets onto the Common Council. He wants to chair the ward, but he loses the election by 7 votes and claims multiple times that he was cheated by the men of P Jacket.
Just like, hey, I was about to win, and then seven guys came in all wearing P Jackets and really freshly shaved, you know? Yeah.
One of them being wheeled in on a coffin, yeah. Like,
it's like, hey, where'd that corpse get that new P jacket from? Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
you can just see a kind of Joe Biden story being formed. Like, I would have taken it, except seven P jacket boys. They came on in. You know, it's like the New York Times writing an article, like, actually Joe Biden did encounter several P jacket boys in his youth.
No Pinocchios. Yeah, no turns Pinocchio. Out.
Yeah, there's Sully Corn Pop McGuire. So at the age of 28, 1902, he's in the Massachusetts House of Representatives, and he founds his own political organization, the Tammany Club, which, yes, is named after Tammany Hall.
Oh, that's beautiful to be like this widely hated machine politics thing. I'm going to do that, but like as a franchise, you know?
Look, Democrats are always like this, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess so.
But it's an interesting thing where he's like, I'm not a part of the machine. I'm going to found my own.
I'm part of a different, better machine.
Yeah, I'm raging against the machine by making a bigger and different machine.
Yeah. Raging against the machine with my machine?
It's basically like a battle bots situation.
It's the most efficient way to rage against the machine is with another machine.
That's right.
Otherwise, it's just a John Henry situation, you know?
Yeah, power is never conceded peacefully, you know, ever. So you have to make your own battle bot. Yeah,
you can't rage against the machine with the machine. You gotta make your own machine, you know, a liberatory machine.
You have to use the master's tools to dismantle that house.
You have to build another house and crash it into the master's house.
You have to build a house on wheels like Mortal Engines.
You're just describing like separatism, basically, as a force. That's what fucking any of the lesbian separatist communes were meant to be, you know?
Yeah, well, the lesbian separatist commune is you build a house far away and the people in the house look at your house and they say, wait, I'll come to your house instead. And then the house comes back, which never works.
All right, so this guy was a lesbian separatist.
So this guy's a lesbian separatist.
I'm following you so far.
Yeah, he starts a Tammany Club. He like whips all the neighborhood votes to him instead, and then he takes the ward and becomes chair of it that way.
How many shillelagh beatings do you think this involved?
Yeah,
this is like conservatively.
The dumpster's all bloody shillelaghs that have been dropped at the crime scene like a mobster.
Just picking up a fresh shillelagh out of my shillelagh storage rack.
Getting Boston whacked with a shillelagh.
I saw the police drop that shillelagh by that. They planted that shillelagh on him.
That's why you want the Pico. Provides you a lot of like cushioning.
That's right. So the shillelaghs are flying.
I've filed these serial number off of my shillelagh, and I'm ready to go cause trouble.
3D printing a shillelagh at home with a lathe. I call it a ghost shillelagh because it's untraceable. Back to me.
Yeah, they'll never be able to find the tree I made this from. So the political machine is at its height of its powers then, but the bosses in the public imagination are starting to be seen as like corrupt crooks.
Yeah, because of all the corruption, you know?
Probably because of all the corruption.
Because of the numerous beatings that were involved in their election. Yeah,
because of the number of shillelaghs being found in the
street. This guy, you know, he did build the, like, you know, subway, but he is also currently having the shit kicked out of me, personally, you know?
Look at his hands. They're full of splinters.
I support his subway building platform, but I really can't get on board with his kicking the shit out of me currently platform.
I'm only going to vote for him 8 times, you know, down from the usual 14. That's harm. It's like harm reduction, you know, the equivalent of voting uncommitted in machine politics. Yeah. Is you only let them dress you up so you can vote again like half a dozen times.
I'm voting with my feet by running away from this guy with a shillelagh.
No, I like the idea. It's like you're rating them out of 10. That's how many times you vote.
Yeah, it's like ranked preference voting, except for fraud.
Yeah, I'm only voting for him twice.
So a bunch of good government groups are on the rise locally, mostly backed by the Boston Brahmins. The New York Times in 1903.
Maddie, I have a question.
Yeah, Riley.
How resistant are they to shillelagh beatings?
The Yankees have developed a sort of anti-shillelagh armor that are walking around Boston in shock-absorbing tuxedos.
That's why you have that big stovepipe hat. It's a lot of crush depth to get through before you get to the head.
That's right. They're designed to be crushed. Most people don't understand that.
A stovepipe hat, or as they call it, the Boston crumple zone.
Just like approaching you with a shillelagh, threatening to instantly close your opera hat.
I'm putting on more hats as I walk through the bad neighborhoods.
It's a sign of your unacknowledged racial prejudice that you always put on 5 giant hats whenever you walk through Little Ireland.
This looks like a bad neighborhood puts on additional
hats. Stacking, going, oh, you look like fucking Bartholomew Cubbins over there. So in 1903, the New York Times issued a series of reports on municipal corruption and referred to Boston City Hall as, quote, practically all grafters. This is certainly true, and the machine begins to function a little worse, a little less smoothly in the 1890s or so, after that machine boss, the non-PJ, okay, McGuire, dies suddenly, and all the ward bosses begin to bicker.
They had to start calling him died suddenly McGuire after that, you know, because he had a new trait.
So he dies, all the ward bosses start bickering amongst each other, kind of like when...
Vaccinated?
What's that?
Vaccinated.
I legitimately didn't hear you.
They called him hashtag died suddenly McGuire.
Anyway, so, you know, Curly quickly latches on to this and portrays the machine as like entirely corrupt and positions himself outside of it, all the while himself being infamous for political favors, vote buying, and kickbacks.
But it really helped him when he went on Joe Rogan's great grandfather's podcast and then was able to position himself as an outsider to the. Well, I didn't say, of course, he went on the vaudeville show that Joe Rogan's great grandfather held.
Yeah, I was going to say his podcast was his grandfather standing on a mound and yelling. Yeah. In 1904, Curley and an unrelated man, Thomas Curley, helped two applicants in their district cheat on federal service exams for postmen by impersonating them and taking the exam.
Wait, hold on. Yeah, is it an exam to be a postman?
Yeah, because you probably had to be able to read, I assume.
I guess.
Dog avoidance.
Dog avoidance, shillelagh avoidance, gloom of night avoidance.
How to use your shillelagh on a dog, probably. Yeah.
There's one that's just like, will we falter in any of the following? Rain, sleet, snow, none of the above.
None of the above. Yeah.
Please tick one. Tick all that apply.
Yeah. But this was a big hit amongst his reputation with the Boston Brahmin, but the local Irish loved it because they saw a guy as grifting for them. You know, he was briefly jailed and emerged running for city alderman.
I would love to be grifted for, right? Yeah. Like, that would be incredible to be like a guy who's like, I'm going to get you like a good job, like a career with presumably you can buy a house instantly with the like 5 cents they pay you back in the day.
Stovepipe hat Will Stansel hates this one weird trick.
You become white instantly as well. Like, it just, you know.
Well, also the other thing is, right, is Americans and the British as well love the idea that someone is going to be like scamming on their behalf, because there's an innate knowledge
who
that like
love that.
No, everyone involved with this is inherently dishonest. We want someone who's at least going to be like dishonest, but sort of fun, and will consider me in his like.
Yeah, we want
insiders.
Someone who will play the game on our side, since that's the game that there is.
He's personally taking exams for constituents, right? Like, where's that level of service? These days.
I mean, again, there's only one politician I could imagine doing something like that, and it's Rob Ford.
Yeah, Rob Ford would sit your SATs. Yeah, like, no question. You would not benefit from that in any way, but he would sit them.
No, this is mayor moment.
You could get Rob Ford to sit any exam for you, and then you would just look back and you'd see his head start to steam as he figures out like integrals.
What if Rob Ford was like a savant, but for like the needs of his constituents, and it turned out that like Agent 47, he could pass advanced calculus if someone asked him to get them a job?
Yeah, Rob Ford took my SATs for me, but he got a 0, which you can't even get. So,
no, it's just like he's like, my constituent needs me. He locks the fuck in, and he knows what yachtsman is to regatta as, you know.
I like the idea. Okay, so there's two versions of Rob Ford taking the SATs. There's November's version, which is like he doesn't know what he knows, but he has kind of He's sort of omnipotent, but like not able to use any of it.
He taps into mayor space. Yes.
If he tries to do anything, it will descend into racial epithets in a barrage of business cards. Whereas what Maddie is suggesting is that Rob Ford is going to find new ways, or would if he was alive, find, maybe he is still alive, the occluded mayor. Maybe we'll find new ways. I mean, difficult to occlude Rob Ford, not an easy task. I'll find new ways to like score low on the SATs. Like in the portion where you write your name, he would write Rob Ford, then cross it out, then say constituent, then cross it out, then say like Grace McLady, and then just do it with that.
So he's jailed for this post service thing. He emerges running for city alderman, which is the higher chamber of the legislature locally.
He's just in jail doing the jail montage, but instead of doing pull ups, he's just like looking at big ward maps instead.
Kind of. He comes out and he tells the press that he, quote, did it for a friend. He wins a spot in the alderman's.
That's great. Be like, no, you don't get it. I broke the law because it was convenient for me. Don't you see?
No, I was helping somebody. It's like an incredible thing to say as a politician.
Yeah. I was being loyal to my capo, you know?
Yeah. I did it for my friend. I'll do it for you.
Exactly. Basically.
But yeah, for sure. I'd vote for that guy, probably.
Yeah. Curly is for you. There for they, them. So...
People are sending Devin like angry telegrams in 1903 because they're not voting for James Curley in an American local election.
I'm voting for James Curley. Deep and lore. Then the second after he gets elected, I have a new hormone prescription and my GP has a shillelagh bruise.
I'm voting for James Curley, but we're planning on pushing James Curley left once he's in office.
So his tenure as alderman seems pretty uneventful, but in 1905, a group of businessmen had founded the Good Government Association of Boston, or GGA, have begun to hoped they were trying to change the city to their whims. They build themselves as like anti-corruption crusaders and hope to install more, scare quotes, appropriate men in local government posts. Read more Brahmin. Okay,
there's too much of this Irish shit around.
For real. Mm.
You should be getting beaten with good, honest English sticks.
That's yes. A stick with no big knob on the end. It's gauche.
My father, when he was, of course, adventuring in Rhodesia, found this knob carry. Try this on for size, old chap.
Boston Brahmin attempting, like pre-Irish, attempting to pronounce the word shillelagh is going to sit with me as a tulpa from a
shillelagh.
Now, let me see here. These shillelags.
Yeah. The machine politicians take issue with this. They accuse the GGA of playing anti-Irish politics, which they fucking were. They said the businessman wanted the Brahmin back in power. Long story short, the GGA manages to succeed in an effort to merge the bicameral legislature into a single, smaller city council. Curly sets his eyes onwards and upwards. Anyways.
Like, what if this army of postmen elect me to this thing that you've tried to make unattainable to me?
Basically.
It's kind of inspiring.
So he is hoping to run for mayor in 1910, Curly is, but was convinced out of it by a powerful machine politician, John F. Honey Fitzgerald, the father of Rose and grandfather of JFK.
Beautiful, beautiful nickname already.
Yeah, Honey Fitz.
Why Honey Fitz?
Probably because he was a speaker.
Just like listening to a guy who can talk really good, being like, damn, this is a lot like how honey tastes to me in that it's sweet.
November, I have something that's come into my head, which is shillelagh. Blasted difficult to pronounce, but I say an uncommon companion to the boarding axe and pistol.
Are you guys doing post-captain right now?
Yeah, he's doing Aubrey. He's doing Jack Aubrey.
Okay, that's yours for the episode.
Sometimes the spirit moves him.
That's,
you know?
Sure. I saw him typing that in the document, and I was very confused by it. And now I get it. Great.
All right, so fucking Honey Boop or whatever. Tell me more about this guy. Matt, I just looked him up. That's a wide face. That is a wide, wide face. Yeah.
It's a wide looking man.
He looks like they put him in the hydraulic press for a second.
Yeah. Like so much honey. So he promises Curly that he would be a one-term mayor and stay off the ballot in 1914 and clear the way for him if Curly doesn't run. So Curly instead goes to the U.S. Congress in 1911. You know, so there's a great little stunt he ran at this point. His Curly's opponent for Congress, William J. McNary, was elaborating on the theme of his own integrity to evidently tedious lengths, according to the Harvard Crimson. Forthwith, Curly summoned one of his indigent acquaintances, suited him up in Grecian-like robes, put a lantern in his hand, and set this Diogenes out of the streets of South Boston. His inability to find the honest man, McNary was attended by sufficient cameramen and reporters to ensure the Curly victory at the polls. So he like sent this guy out in a robe being like, where's the honest man? And that worked on people, apparently.
People, you could just do anything back in the day.
Yeah.
I'm skimming ahead in Honey Fitz's Wikipedia article. And I don't know how this fits into your narrative, so please take it out if it spoils it. But just it's a succession, like a three hit combo of like Boston 20s names.
I have this. Don't worry.
Okay. You go ahead, please.
We're gonna get to this because this is what we're talking about next. So
okay.
This is important. Yeah, this is great. So after an unremarkable.
I think it was pretty remarkable. Like, they were sending them in and back and vote.
After a shillelagh stint in the house, Curly is once again sets his sight on the mayor's chair. Honey Fitz breaks his promise and announces a run for re-election.
Oh, Honey Fitz, you dog. Never trust a Kennedy.
Trust a pre-Kennedy. A Kennedy precursor.
The pre-Kennedy is kind of thinner, you know, a bit watery.
The dead pre-Kennedys.
Pretty good.
The best I can figure, there's no party primaries at this point. So Curly has run afoul. But
the machine just spits someone out, basically.
Yeah, the machine spits several people out, and you can run as a Democrat or Republican or unaffiliated or whatever party you're with, but it's all one election. Mm-hmm. So Curly has run afoul of the machine with his comments about corruption and was basically running unsupported by the ward bosses. But determined to re-elect Honey Fitz, the bosses held a meeting and voted 19-1 to coerce Quirly to withdraw. Quirly to withdraw, and he didn't. The ward bosses go after him publicly, and Curly refers to them at the time as a collection of empty eggshells incapable of delivering for anybody.
Get their asses, Curly.
The GGA also going after him at this point, the Good Government Association, whom Curly calls the Goo Goos.
I like this guy already. He's fighting everybody. He helped me get a job as a postman.
Yeah.
It's all good.
So the GGA could not escape, he called the GGA the Goo Goos. They are as a wasp freakazoids. They could not handle being called that and were very, very, very mad about it because it's 1911. It's 1911 or it's 1914 or whatever. And they're like, you can't call me a Goo Goo. It's the worst thing you'd call a person.
Yeah, this is just the toxic behavior of the Curly Bros. They're not understanding that the Good Government Alliance is electable if you vote for it 19 times.
do we want to talk about how he got Honey Fitz out of the race?
Yes. I think Riley had a question first.
I have one question, though, right? Which is, a lot of what we know about Curly is what he did to get and maintain power, which was a huge amount of corruption and shillelagh beatings.
Yes.
And also like some very public, high profile crime that he basically used as an election tool that seemed to work.
Yes.
When he was in power, was he mostly concerned with simply maintaining power, or did he? I think I know the answer, which is that he didn't have a political vision beyond I should be in charge.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you. To be sure.
At this point of his career, he is certainly unremarkable when he reaches like the state house, when he is on the city council. He's not really doing much besides helping out his friends. Some of his friends are the poor people in the neighborhood. So he's certainly still like, my constituency is the poor, and he's still doing some stuff to maintain that power, but it is mostly in the form of kickbacks and not like policy.
He's your guy if you grew up with him.
Very much so.
He's a bit like, I like Frank Lucas, an American Gangster. He's in charge and he throws turkeys to the poor every once and again.
Yeah, he's John Gotti. Like he is a mafioso or a gangster in a lot of ways.
But the thing that I find about how he gets Honey Fitz out of the race is he makes common cause with this agreement with a lawyer called Daniel H. Coakley.
Yes.
A guy with an incredible mustache. And they blackmail Honey Fitz.
That's right.
Because he's having an affair with a woman the same age as his daughter.
Yeah, that's right.
A 24-year-old cigarette girl, named Elizabeth Toodles Ryan.
Yeah, I know exactly that's what you saw, and you wanted to get there so bad. And now we're here.
I've had it highlighted for like 5 minutes in my browser.
It's so good.
Elizabeth Toodles Ryan.
So a cigarette girl was someone who sold cigarettes at like the club. At the club.
Okay, at the club.
At the club. Mm-hmm. You like sold cigarettes. You're like a little box with cigarettes.
And presumably as she like sells the cigarettes, she's like Toodles or whatever.
That's right.
And this guy, and JFK's grandpa is like, I must fuck her.
That's right. And sort of like a 19th century shock girl.
In the same kind of, okay, that's number one. That's a great idea. But it's so stupid. It's so awful. It's like you go in and then the cigarette girls, they're wearing skirts that like show their lower ankles. And it's all just to sell you smokes in the club. It's also another example of quite obvious nicknames. Like, oh yes, she says goodbye. Let's call her Toodles.
Toodles.
Yeah, the same people that named P-Jacket named Toodles Ryan.
Yeah, so this guy Coakley also is like renowned for extorting people. This comes back.
Yeah, like they used to call him Extortion Coakley.
He was an expert at orchestrating badger games, which is like an old con.
What the fuck?
Where you you basically like, it is derived from the practice of badger baiting. But the idea is basically you send someone to like have an affair with somebody. And then
like a honey trap.
Like a honey trap.
Badger trap, I guess.
So like you send someone to have an affair and then the guy
has an affair.
And then the quote unquote boyfriend of the person you sent to have an affair goes over and is like, I'm going to kick the shit out of you, dude, unless you pay me money.
Uh-huh. Okay, sure.
That's illegal now because of HR, by the way.
Because
used to be a job that great Americans could have.
Yeah. So Toodles had hired Coakley to represent her in a lawsuit against her employer. And during this, she disclosed to Coakley that she had kissed Fitzgerald, honey. Coakley and Curly sent a letter to Fitz's wife and announced that they'd be
Is that Toodles and honey kissing?
Toodles and honey are kissing in the corner of the club.
School ass sentence. Yeah.
But Coakley and Curly sent a letter to Fitz's wife saying that they're going to give a lecture tour entitled, quote, Great Lovers in History, From Cleopatra to Toodles. This causes, of course, Honey Fitz to drop out of the 1913 mayoral race, and Curly never delivered the lecture. But perhaps as revenge for breaking his no campaign promise, he does this. But everyone, because Coakley got the kissing incident in the court record during the trial of Toodles, for the lawsuit, kind of killing Honey Fitz's career for a while. During all this, Fitz withdraws from the mayor's race. The GGA and the bosses put up another guy. Curly beats him too, mainly by running on the obvious racial tensions in town. You know, here was an Irish guy, fought for the poor. He's being assailed by the Goo-Goos, trying to remove all the Irish from public office and the corrupt party bosses. His victory kind of kills the old ward boss system and creates a new ward boss system that he is in charge of.
meet the new ward boss, same as the old ward
boss. This is like if they did the RICO Act and then did the RICO Act 2, which installed a new mafia run by the federal government.
So he basically did actually destroy the master's house by building an equivalent house and crashing it into the master's house.
Speaking of building a house, he had one built for him on Jamaica Plain.
That's right.
For free, basically, because it, like, out of a series of kickbacks.
Uh-huh.
It was the house that Favors built, which is so conceptually cool to me.
It's number one, okay, you don't like mutual aid. Number two.
Yeah, you can just say that and go, you know? It's not my job to educate you.
If you're going to be against mutual aid for someone who was basically instrumental in setting up bread, not shillelaghs, then like you're not a real early 20th century leftist.
Yeah.
Also, it's just mayors. This is just like the mayor's promise, which is like, I am for sale. Like if he was like anytime Curly ever went on like a steamboat trip to Santiago, his wife was always like, why are we taking a steamboat trip to Istanbul first? It adds 4 months to the journey time.
So yes, this is like the Boston mayor at this point. Yeah. Does not have a residence. So he has the free one built, the Boston Finance Commission, which is mostly provided over by a lot of Protestant Republicans, you know, Brahmins. Investigates him a bunch of times, but Daniel Coakley, the fixer, takes care of that most likely via extortion, bribes.
Yeah, please speak to my lawyer, Extortion Coakley. He has some pictures here I think you'd be interested to see.
This is also just like Sandro Lisi, basically.
Yeah,
The mayor, stopped at like a coaching station outside, or like a train station outside of Boston, and exchanged briefcases full of autochromes of like of like Boston Brahmins gawping at the legs of cigarette girls.
So to answer your earlier question, Riley, so when he finally reaches the mayoralty, he does spend a lot of money on improvements to poor districts. He adds some public transit. He builds a lot of hospitals, but he does this by securing loans from city banks, coercing them to issue them under the threat of city action against them. And he also starts blackmailing Boston social elite for funds for public works projects, which to me is cool.
Again, you're talking about, you want to build power. Like, you also need a mafia as well as a party.
Yeah. He starts getting a bunch of negative press for all the crime. And he starts threatening reporters constantly with libel suits, and once assaults the publisher of the Boston Telegraph in person. So, all right, let me set a scene for you. I want to get the Tides of History music going. They're like the bring, you know.
Patrick, could you please send us the pling from the Tides of History?
Bring. So it's a beautiful morning in the north end of Boston. A clear sky, impossibly blue. But what's that? The signature gurgling of an enormous tidal wave of molasses. However, our guy was not the mayor anymore. Because in 1917, 2 years earlier, Curley ran for office again. This time, Lomanzi, the West End boss I mentioned before, would have his revenge. Mm. He orchestrated the entrance of Peter Francis Tague into the race, a second Irishman who he hoped would siphon off enough votes to elect someone else, and it worked. The victory went to Republican Andrew James Peters, who evidently was a suspect in the salacious tabloid death of socialite Star Faithful. Which is just some cool stuff. Just a cool sentence.
I feel like I've just been hit in the head and like watched three seasons of Boardwalk Empire three different TVs at once at different speeds.
Yeah. So he misses the molasses disaster as mayor, but it's just funny to think about.
Just perfectly like dodges Boston 9/11.
That's right. In 1918, right after he loses the mayoral election.
The one Boston 9/11 that there is, the Boston molasses flood.
Yeah, no other bad thing ever happened. In 1918, right after this happens, the Massachusetts state legislature, sensing that like the Curley century is upon them, passes a law banning consecutive terms for mayors anyway. So I'm entering now a segment I call 3 a.m. going back for more mayor, because in 1921, Curley runs again and wins again. I couldn't find a ton about this race, but he defeats three other candidates, mainly narrowly coming out ahead of John R. Murphy, the head of the Boston Fire Department. Apparently, Curley dressed up. This is another from a Harvard Crimson article in 1958. Curley dressed up a few of his camp followers as priests and sent them across Charlestown and elsewhere, saying that John R. Murphy had renounced his Catholic faith, joined a Masonic order, had been observed attending Back Bay's Trinity Church, and intended to divorce his good wife in order to marry a 16-year-old girl. As the campaign was drawing to its successful close, Curley asked a Roxbury audience, "Where was James Michael Curley last Friday night? He was conducting a political meeting in Duxbury. Where was Mr. Murphy? Eating steak out at the Copley Plaza."
Fucking get his ass.
John R. Murphy, he parties with the boys at Copley Plaza at night, but in the morning, he's at a political meeting in Duxbury with the men.
So this was the first race that women could vote in. So I'm deciding that Curley is a feminist icon. Slay. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the thing. You get an extra vote out of all the dudes because after you shave them, you dress them up as a woman, send them through again. It's like that one guy on Twitter, you know?
Yeah. Hey.
Oh, boy. I don't want to talk about that guy.
Hey, how come Billy Estrogen is unwilling to get out of his lady costume to vote the eighth time?
So his second term starting in 1922. A little less eventful than his first, but he steeps his reputation for spending Boston's money easily, and he gets his patronage scheme up and running again very quickly. He runs for governor during this time as well, but lost, but not before orchestrating a bunch of fake KKK scares around his events to drive home the point about anti-Irish racism. He is
doing false flag attacks on the fucking Back Bay. What the fuck?
Yeah, he's doing like, oh, look how racist they are against the Irish, which like I don't think you needed to prove, but they're like faking KKK attacks.
He invented being Jesse Smollett for the Irish.
That's basically right. He is term limited out in 1926, and a Boston Brahmin and the last Republican to hold the position to this day took the reins as mayor. I'm going to do a little check-in on our friend Coakley Corner. the lawyer and sort of fixer for Curly. In 21, I'm gonna say he was quote what I'm gonna call mega disbarred for deceit, malpractice, and gross misconduct. All that extortion catches up with the guy.
It was weird how the state bar like slammed him through a folding table. I don't know if they needed to do that.
Yeah, I just can't believe that they disbarred extortion Coakley.
Yeah. he gets sued like five times in the 1920s. He runs himself for Boston mayor in 1917 with the intention of clearing the name of a DA that was a close friend of him that was part of all of his schemes that got removed from office.
These guys, they love scheming together so much.
He loves his boy so much he runs for mayor to clear his boy's name, but he loses. Aww.
So I think, you know what I've discovered is that we've also identified the Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman of the early 20th century.
At some point, he has a falling out with
Curly.
It's
like Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman aren't actually aberrant. They're just anachronistic.
Yeah. So Coakley loves this guy Pelletier, the DA, so much that when he has a fight with Curly publicly, Curly and Coakley have a falling out, and Coakley runs against Curly for mayor in 1929. Curly wins again his third term. He's now 55, so he gets back as mayor for the third non-consecutive time.
Three non-consecutive mayoral terms. Beautiful. Yeah,
that must be the highest number of non-consecutive mayoral terms a person can have, certainly, you think to yourself now at this point in the story.
Must be. Surely.
Surely. Curly immediately goes back to his old habits, runs the city the way he liked to do it, you know, on his own behalf.
There's a bit on the Wikipedia page that I'm highlighting. Can you guess what it is?
Is it about him pretending to be a delegate from Puerto Rico at the DNC?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
As Alcalde Jaime Curleo. I was going to say, you'll know Alcalde is Spanish for mayor from our sister show, Sin Dioses, Sin Alcades. So yeah, this episode here. So this was like back when the DNC was like sort of like a mysterious smoky room and someone would just emerge the nominee.
Mm. It was like conclave.
Yeah, kind of. He got denied a spot at the DNC by the mayor, or by the governor of Massachusetts at the time. And he then engineers his selection of the DNC as a delegate from Puerto Rico under that alias, Mayor Jaime Curleo. he takes a lot of credit for FDR's nomination at the 32 convention, but had a public break with FDR after he did not appoint Curley as ambassador to Ireland.
FDR just fully buying this guy as being like, why would I appoint this Puerto Rican guy? he doesn't know anything about Ireland at all.
Completely
speaks
different
primarily
island.
what I believe to be Spanish.
So
just FDR just so wasp he can't tell like Boston Irish accent and like Puerto Rican apart, and he's just like, God. Yeah, no, I mean buenos dias or whatever.
Curly is, of course, term limited out again. He takes another run at the governorship and he beats an anti-New Deal Republican, Gaspar Bacon. This is 34. It's like huge Democratic wave.
Gaspar Bacon. Incredible.
He immediately gets into a shoving match with that departing governor who denied him the spot at the DNC.
When? Like at the inauguration?
Yeah, I think so. The historian Gerard O'Neill calls his one-term governorship, quote, ludicrous part of the time, shocking most of the time, and tawdry all of the time.
Beautiful.
He goes crazy spending again, not really knowing where the money is coming from. He spends all of his political capital immediately going after the Boston Finance Commission, the ones that kept investigating him for his magic mansion.
Everyone in Massachusetts hates the people asking questions about my crown molding.
It's time to get some answers.
It's time to get some answers, not to the questions about my crown molding, but why there are so many questions about my crown molding.
He impeaches and fires all the investigators.
Yeah, let's see how you like it when I ask you a bunch of invasive questions about your finances,
hey,
huh?
Why did I come into your house and ask who put up your fireplace?
He does that exact fucking thing. He purges the committee and replaces it with his allies who then start going after his political enemies.
That's, oh my God. This guy's like fucking Boston Putin.
Meanwhile, the Great Depression is like raging and everyone is sick of his shit amazingly quickly. Because he's not doing anything for anybody poor. He's feeling the walls closing in, maybe, I assume. And so instead of running for re-election, he runs for Senate.
He's feeling the walls closing in. And so he's like, quickly, construction companies, please build larger walls.
Well, he's like, the walls are closing in as governor. I'll run for Senate instead of governor. And it's
God.
This is 1936, where Democrats win like Reagan style landslides everywhere for the Senate, but he gets beat by a Republican anyways.
Oh,
that's so sad that there was a ceiling for this guy. He could have been president just out of a series of like attempting to outrank each of his haters.
Outrank your haters at the Senate of Success.
Having the like authority to investigate your haters is what it's like. That was the sole thing driving him at this point, it feels like.
So his career is not looking incredible at this point. Public opinion is turning. A local journalist and commentator, Lewis Lyon, said of him, "Curley controls the Commonwealth by means of the smallest and cheapest political heelers that ever shined their trousers in the seats of public office in Massachusetts." People don't like him. But Curley goes back home in 1937. He runs for Boston mayor one more time, but he is beat by his former protege, Maurice Tobin. In 1939, the Boston mayor term limit law was repealed because they were like, well, this guy's finally done. We don't have to have this stupid law.
There's no way he's coming back.
Like, literally, right? This law was just so he would not be the mayor the whole time.
The No Curleys Association, basically.
Yeah. In 1938, Curley is like, I guess I'll be the governor again. And he primaries the Democratic governor, Charles F. Hurley, and he wins. But he loses the general to a man named, and this is true, Leverett Atholville Saltonstall.
That's too much Protestantism around here. You know what I mean?
Atholville Saltonstall.
He's an heir to the Peter Chardon Brooks fortune.
Yeah, this guy sounds like a Mayflower survivor.
He literally is.
Yeah.
You open up Saltonstall family on Wikipedia. They've got a coat of arms.
Oh. I do feel like that guy's name sounds like if you're trying to very quickly think up a fake name after you've been hit by a shillelagh.
That's right. So 1941, Curley's like, I'll run for mayor again. And this time the guy Tobin beats him again in a squeaker.
Being beaten twice by your own protege. Yeah. Ruthless.
Curley at this time has also lost a substantial amount of money in an unsuccessful Nevada gold mine operation. So it's 42. What do you want to do? You're James Michael Curley. You run for the U.S. House of Representatives because it's just the one thing you haven't done yet.
He just loves running for stuff.
he leans on his own standby, at the Yankees.
I just looked at something. We should note this.
Please.
The Saltonstall's great 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 grandfather was the mayor of London.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No gods, no mayors origins episode.
Yeah.
So he beats a new dealer, this guy Tom Elliott, because he was the grandson of Harvard's president. So Curley is effectively able to run against this guy saying he's like a Yankee Brahmin guy. He also calls him a communist, saying there is more Americanism in one half of Jim Curley's ass than the pink body of Tom Elliott.
First of all, the formation one half of my own referring to myself in the third person ass is funny. But second one of cheek. All, what a story, what a trajectory the American 20th century had, that this guy who was like, you know, born in the 1880s in the like fucking like gangs of New York brackets Boston is now having to talk about communism and be like, this guy's a fucking pinko. Or whatever it's what a life. How do you fit all of that into like just like 50 years? You know,
it's crazy because it keeps going here. In 1945, in the middle of his second term in the House, he vacates his seat to run for mayor of Boston again.
just like, I want that house back.
No, they look. They got rid of the law.
That's right.
It's like, look. I read the first 80% of The Tortoise and the Hare. We've basically almost run the race. Let's just relax for a little while.
So a big allegedly alert here, but some say...
It's just genuinely like, oh yeah, he became president for like 2 4-year terms and then went back to being mayor because he wanted to do that job and just was kind of in between things otherwise. Yeah.
So some say that Joseph P. Kennedy paid him off so his son, a guy named John F. Kennedy Jr., could run for the seat easily.
Yeah, non-honey fits.
Non-honey fits, but it's just...
Vinegar fits.
Vinegar fits.
Gunshot wound fits.
Yeah, so he might have paved the way for JFK's ascension through the House by vacating his seat, maybe. So Tobin, his once protege and now enemy, had the governorship, and Curley somehow wins a fourth term over the acting mayor, Johnny Carrigan, in a landslide, despite being under investigation for bribery and fraud and facing a felony indictment during the campaign for participating in a fraudulent organization that misrepresented its resources in order to win war contracts for clients. Curly let the org use his name on their letterhead.
He won a wartime election while getting investigated for war profiteering?
That's right. He let the organization use his head on letterhead, use his name on letterhead, collected $60,000 in government funds fraudulently. In 1946, a month into his fourth term as mayor, Curley was convicted on 10 counts of mail fraud, sentenced to 6 to 18 months at the federal prison in Danbury. But Harry Truman, who was also just weirdly the investigator that uncovered the fraud, commuted the sentence after 5 months, citing Curley's health.
Whoa, hold on. They did the hypothetical Trump timeline where he was mayor from prison?
So he was mayor and then went to prison. And John Hines was the acting mayor while he was in prison.
Oh, that's no fun. They should have let him still do it from jail.
Death style.
That only works, though, if you're still the guards have to be really trying to stop it.
Yeah.
Hey, are you being the mayor in there?
He's smuggling little notes out through his lawyer and shit.
The Boston Correctional, the correctional guards with their small police guard shillelaghs, the small ones that fit on their belt, are banging the bars like, hey, you better not be doing any mayor stuff in there. Are you signing bills? It's contraband.
Maybe I'm signing a bill that increases your pay. I don't know.
Yeah. So at this time, normally under the city charter.
So I have one more question. When you say it's a different Harry Truman, right?
No.
Really?
Yes.
So you're basically, I want to take forward something November said a little earlier. This guy who was born into gangs of New York ends up interacting with the nuclear president.
That's right.
And was in the same prison that Steve Bannon just got out of.
Yeah. This is 1946. The city charter says that the city council president gets to be the acting mayor, but that guy was also under investigation for bribery. So the city council passed emergency legislation to grant full mayoral powers to John Hines, a city clerk.
Just some guy. You become mayor by default.
Yeah, and now the convention center is named after him.
Imagine you just go into work one day as a city clerk, another day of paper shuffling. You go in and they just drop a mayoral sash on you. We're like, run things.
Well, he was the city clerk, which is a position, I believe.
I know.
No, you don't. I'm telling you.
It'd be better if it wasn't.
I'm correcting you.
It's more fun to imagine one of the clipboard guys just seeing everybody get arrested like the end of fucking, what am I even thinking of?
I don't know. It's a lot of movies.
Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah, that's one of them. People get arrested in that movie for sure.
That was one of the movies I was thinking of. Thank you.
So Curley gets out of prison, and on his first day back, he's greeted by a cheering crowd and a band playing Hail to the Chief. He tells reporters, I have accomplished more in one day than has been done in the 5 months of my absence, which pisses off Hines bad.
Because they've been monitoring my phone calls.
Yeah. So Hines is so pissed off. So he runs against Curley.
Smuggling up bills up my lawyer's ass.
So Hines runs against Curley because he's so mad.
Oh, it's his own clerk.
He wins as a reform candidate somehow. I don't know what he's reforming because everything seems like it's fine.
Reforming not going to jail. You're running on I'm the guy they could find who wasn't in prison.
Yeah.
I prefer mayors who didn't get captured.
Yeah. Curley, on his way out, issues a bunch of city contracts to more of his cronies. Uh-huh. as a lame duck. The next election is 1951. He's still going. And he's like, I'm going to run again.
You can't get rid of this guy.
No, he loses, though, pretty decisively. 1950s, he's been drummed out of public office at this point pretty decisively. In 1957, he publishes an autobiography entitled, I'd Do It Again.
The man who was addicted to being mayor.
So he dies in 1958, just shy of his 84th birthday. His funeral, according to the Jamaica Plain Historical Society, was and remains the largest funeral in the history of the city of Boston.
His house is still there. Yeah. It looks really nice. It's got shamrock window shutters.
It's incredible. There are two statues of him at Faneuil Hall. The final score, James Michael Curley, four victorious mayoral races against six failed.
His the Curley family still holds the Massachusetts auto registration number 5.
Yes, that's correct.
You could just have a license plate that just says 5 on it because you're this guy's like grandkids.
I believe so.
America's so cool.
This guy ran for mayor 10 times and then ran for the U.S. House of Reps twice. He ran for the governorship, I think, what did I say, 3
we
times?
We don't normally have a scoreboard. Also, if you look at his Wikipedia article, the like info box under his picture with the like list of posts is like, it's like border gore. There's so much of it because he was in so many of them for so many non-consecutive terms.
Yeah. So that's our friend, James Michael Curley.
This has felt incredible.
Yeah, I did all the research for this in like a day because I went in so insane reading about like the Boston political machine and how it worked. I was reading about like Irish racism for 6 hours. It was great.
Oh my God.
That's our boy.
So also, I think just to let you know, I mean, I always follow on Twitter the closest Twitter, using the No Gods, No Mayors Twitter, the closest Twitter account to any mayor we've talked about. And for James Michael Curley, I found one called Gov Curley. As Governor Curley was the 55th governor of Massachusetts, and I'm running this page in his memory. I'm a cousin through his first wife, Mary Hurley. Stories welcome, and it links to a Facebook page. There are 6 followers. One of them is us.
Beautiful. Well, I hope we've honored him and his insane legacy. You know,
the only tweet the account has ever actually posted is just politics is an intriguing business. Persistence is the key to success.
I call it politics.
And you know what? That's what James Michael Curley taught us. Persistence is the key to success in politics. Never, never stop running for mayor.
Always run for mayor. I note here a sentence at the head of his Wikipedia page. He ran for mayor in every election which he was legally qualified to do so.
Awesome.
He was never not running for mayor. And when they made laws to try and stop him becoming mayor, he waited them out and became mayor again.
Yeah.
Never let them stop you being mayor.
Your haters become your voters when you run for the executive position of success.
And he was able to power this entire career out of like graft and spite towards Boston Brahmins.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just like he was able to just like, he was like the entirety of Boston politics like flowed through this guy for like 70 years. It's just an insane thing to consider. One incredible man. He's a real mayor case in my mind. This guy is a capital M mayor.
Thank you for bringing this guy to our attention. FDR should have made him ambassador to like to a Spanish speaking country just to see what would have happened.
Don't call his bluff. Call his bluff.
Be like, yeah, this is our first Puerto Rican ambassador. His name is Jaime Curleo, apparently.
This is definitely like, if you're wondering why we did this show, this is basically why. It's because mayors are always doing stuff like this.
Yeah, history's dustbin is littered with guys like this.
Winners.
Winners.
Mm.
Thank you so much for listening on the free feed. There is a Patreon. You can pay $5 a month and get a second a podcast every other week. Next week, I think we're doing some more San Franciscans, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can get on that.
Mm.
That's all I got.
That's right.
Yeah, we hope to see you there. Listen to all of the other podcasts, and we will see you next time.
Okay.
Bye.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye.